In this 63rd episode of the Misal Podcast, you will listen to my conversation with Hunan Kapadia, the CTO and co-founder of Smart Benefits. With Smart Benefits, employers can provide easy access to health and life insurance to their employees at an affordable price. Let's listen in. Welcome to the Misal Podcast. Hunan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Well, thank you for joining me today. Look forward to learning more about what you're building at Smart Benefits. Let's get started with a quick introduction. Please tell me a little bit about yourself and what is the problem that you're trying to solve at Smart Benefits?
My name is Hunan Kapadia. I'm currently the CTO and co-founder at Smart Benefits and Smart Choice. My background is in software engineering. I did my schooling in Pakistan and went to college in the US, engineering school called Worcester Polytechnic outside of Boston. Then after graduating, I worked in the US for about 5 years for a company called Vistaprint in Boston. I then did my MBA from INSEAD and tried my hand at a couple of startups in Singapore and in Pakistan, which didn't work out. And then eventually stumbled into insurance and meeting my current founder, Sipten, at a co-working space in Karachi where we met and decided to pursue insurance when I met him, and particularly Gangu about health insurance, because my family background, both my parents are doctors, but I decided to pursue software engineering. So health was always a conversation in the house. How the health systems in Pakistan and et cetera, et cetera. And then with my life in the US, where I had very good health insurance coverage given to me by my employer, and where I also had the chance to use it for my appendix operation that I had to go in for an emergency, and seeing the benefits of it. When I came back to Pakistan and was working on the different problems on my earlier startups, I realized that in Pakistan, health insurance was negligible, especially when whether you talk retail or whether you talk small MNCs or small companies. It was a very, very hard product to get. It was always reserved for pre-COVID. This was always reserved for the shiny MNCs. So health insurance was a perk if you worked in a shiny MNC in Pakistan. And for me, this was a big problem. I was looking at because health was always close to my heart, and I was also as someone who'd come back, I was looking for health insurance for myself, and I couldn't find anything. I met Sipten, and then we decided to, and I'm one of my core reasons for joining back at the time when it was only Smart Choice was that I would work on not only the tech part, but when it came to health insurance, I would be heavily involved on the business side also. Joined Sipten with working on health insurance, and the problem that we're trying to solve, what we realized, there are several problems in Pakistan when it comes to insurance and healthcare. Healthcare today in Pakistan is primarily paid out of pocket by majority of Pakistanis, which and it shouldn't be that way, because usually what happens is when you pay out of pocket, when something happens, you go to the hospital, and you get a big bill, you're usually taking loans from people, loans from family, friends, etc., to cover those bills, or you're taking loans from other people and then taking years to pay off that loan that you've taken for somebody who had a major operation in a hospital. And globally, insurance is there to take care of it, but in Pakistan, this is non-existent, firstly. And then secondly, the insurance penetration in Pakistan is very, very low. What that means is less than 1% of our GDP goes towards insurance, where India and Bangladesh are standing at 3 to 5%. And the amount of population that is insured is very, very less. Given, yes, it's a hard topic to grasp. It's not something very easy to understand. Insurance straight off the bat, it's not like e-commerce, buying clothes or buying something off the Raz, buying a phone off the Raz. So it's traditionally a hard topic to understand. That's what attracted me to it, and that's the problem. The problem we're trying to solve is fix the selling part of it, where you make it easy for the layman to understand, and then fix the claims part of it, which is completely broken and which is completely non-digital today, and which is completely an opaque and a non-standardized procedure today for the end customer, which pisses him off even more that, hey, you know, I paid for insurance and even I can't get the claim now and no one's helping me. So we're tackling it from two different sides.
So you touched on this a little bit, and I want to learn a little bit more about what you mean by when you say that you're going after a market with like, you know, startups, SMEs, right? So these are like, you know, wouldn't be like, you know, big multinational companies. What value proposition do you bring to them where you say, hey, you know, you should be offering insurance to your employees, or like, you know, you need to work with us because we make it so easy for your employees to basically not worry about certain things like health insurance, right? So it's how do you sell that, and what's the value proposition there?
If you talk about SMEs today, SME in Pakistan means anywhere from a 5-person company to a 100 to 200 people company, right? This company today, if it tries to go to an insurer and tries to get health insurance, most of the insurance companies would reject them. At least before us, before 2020, this was the case. They wouldn't even give them a quote. They're like, you're too small, we can't give you a quote, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason behind it is basic economics. Basically, because the agent on the ground who's selling health insurance is more interested in the commission amount. And that commission amount gets bigger with the bigger number of lives you have. Because today, most of the health insurance that is sold non-digitally, person going from company to company, knocking on doors and selling insurance. So obviously, for him, it makes more sense to go after the bigger fish. The smaller fish, he doesn't focus on. Secondly, health insurance is a very operationally heavy play, because as compared to life insurance, where you would get a claim once in a lifetime of a person, health insurance, you keep getting claims and you have to have an operational procedure and an SOPs and trackability of claims, et cetera, because you get multiple claims from the same person even multiple times a year. So it's a very high frequency claim model, high frequency claim thing, and you need a subsidium. So what we've done basically, how we've made it easy is we have partnered with an insurance company at the back end, where we can now insure a company as small as 5 people. So if you have 5 people, you can get insured, and you can get insured straight away. You don't have to take quotes. You don't have to go through the procedure of sending an email, running after agent, et cetera, et cetera. We built a calculator on our website. You put in your data. You get the quote straight away. You say, yes, you want that. You click on buy, and you give us your employee data, and you get that straight away. Within that five employee pool, we've also added benefits which a bigger MNC will get. For example, maternity. Maternity benefits, which a lot of people in Pakistan want, but they can't get, is because insurance companies used to say, hey, if you don't have 50 spouses, if you don't have 100 spouses in your company, forget it, we're not going to give you maternity. So we've partnered, the product that we built, you can get maternity even if you have 10 people and 5 spouses, you can get maternity and you can get pre-existing condition coverage, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the part where we've solved on the selling side. We've made it easy to and transparent that, hey, this is the price, this is what you get depending on the people that you have. Because health insurance works off the age of the people that you have in your employee base. The second part that we have solved is making it operationally easy to manage the policy and manage claims. So basically, once you buy the policy today, even if you're a 5-person company or you're a 500-person company, so your employees are coming and going, your claims are coming and going. The HR today dealt most of it through emails to the insurance agent and to the insurance company. So there was emails, calls, and a lot of PDFs. So what we've done is to make the whole process transparent and to empower both the HR and the employee. We give the employee an app, we give the HR a portal, and we tell them, hey, okay, if you want to add someone or subtract someone from your company, do it through the portal, and everything's going to be automated, number one. Number two, when you file a claim, we're going to assist you through the claim. What that assistance means is we ensure that before sending it to the insurance company, we vet the claim. We're like, okay, all the documents are complete. This is, we're 80-90% sure that this claim is going to get paid out. And then we send it to the insurance company. So we've built that customer success team, which works with the HR and the employee in ensuring that all the documentation is complete of a claim and ensuring that it will be a successful claim before sending it off to the insurance company. Because what we realized during our process is in Pakistan, if you want to file a claim, unfortunately, unlike in the West, you have to file physical papers. What that means is if you get a hospital, you go to the hospital, come back, an insurance company will not give you a claim until you give physical documents of your hospital stay. Now, depending on the claim, you have to submit different kinds of documents. And that's the part which is very hard to explain. And that's the part where people just lose it. Like, what the hell is this? So that's where we help out the HR and the employee both in filing the proper claim so that they get their claim in the end. And that's where our success has been, basically. Because in the end, what we've realized, it's the more help you do with claims, the more happy people are with their insurance, the more you get retention, and the more you get word of mouth. That's been a recipe for success.
I would say that insurance is not a sexy industry, right? Like, so it's not something that people think of like, oh, you know, I want to work in this industry. So tell me a little bit about what are there certain regulations that, you know, allow you to not do certain things? Like you just mentioned, like, you know, physical paper, that might be more of a, you know, insurance company thing or maybe a hospital thing. But are there other things like that that make it very challenging to pursue something like that?
In Pakistan, insurance is one of the few sectors which is heavily regulated. So, you know, like banks are regulated. Similarly, insurance is regulated through the SECP. It is one of those sectors which is not only regulated on paper, but they also actually implement a lot of the things. Yes, it's not thorough. It's not complete. There's a lot of room for improvement, all of that. Yes, but it is regulated. We operate as someone called a corporate agent. So we are a corporate agent of an insurance company. Then the next level is a broker. Then the next level is becoming an insurance company itself. But we operate as a corporate agent. And today there are obviously when we sell a product, we actually have to tell certain things to the corporate and to the employee about the product in corporate. This is actually more effective on the retail side of things. When I talk about smart choice on the retail side of things, when we put up a product online to sell it, the SECP vets the whole process from how you list it on the website, the things that you talk about over the product, and how the checkout procedure looks. So anything that you're selling on a B2C perspective with an online payment system, it'll be checked and verified by SECP. So there are regulations at play that are happening, and the regulator is now also fairly active and trying to with the whole mandate of improving financial inclusion, et cetera, they're also trying to push and do things which will make things digital and improve and help us increase the penetration of insurance in Pakistan.
You are working in a very heavily regulated industry. So how does one build a technical side of things when it comes to building a product that serves both, like, you know, employers and customers? Is there something that, you know, was particularly challenging building, or was it something very similar to, like, you know, anyone would go around, you know, building a platform for, you know, two-sided marketplace?
Parts of it are similar. Only when you're talking about checkouts and getting sign-offs and agreements. So I'll give you an example. Where it gets challenging, not in the technical part. The technical part is easy. The world has figured it out. You know, there are checkboxes, there are digital signatures, there are other ways of getting verifications and basic data security. You put encryption, etc. All of that, the world has figured out, which the regulator currently doesn't say anything about. The regulator on the tech side doesn't regulate anything on our end, at least for us at the current stage we are in. Maybe in the future as well. But the harder part is convincing the insurance company and the legal departments of the insurance company to digitize something that has been happening manually. So for example, I'll give you an example. We listed a product of term life on our website. And obviously you could look at the product, you could look at the details, and you actually buy it directly from our website. You could do the payment and buy it. During that obviously process, when you're buying a term life product, you have to, in the offline world, you have to actually sign a paper. You have to sign a paper through physically when you were doing it in the offline world. Now, we were the first ones doing it digitally. It took us 4 meetings with their legal to convince them that, hey, you know, the sign cannot happen digitally. And there's a checkbox thing that globally it's used. It's a global practice that where you check off that, hey, I agree to the terms and conditions. And this works globally, so this should work here. This is standard practice. Took us 4 meetings with their legal to convince them that, you know, this is how it works, this is how it should be, blah blah blah. So it took a lot of time to convince and to change their mindset, and that has been the bigger challenge of changing the mindset of the people working in legacy companies.
As a CTO, of course, you are hiring a lot of talent, and what do you look for when you're looking for, you know, talent? Are you looking for experience? Are you looking for people who are really passionate about the industry? Or you just are looking for, you know, set of skills that have both, you know, experience as well as like the passion for the industry?
Basically, I've evolved to now looking at basically communication skills are the biggest thing that I'm looking at. Tech skills, I've learned is my experience is that people usually learn it. It's not something that they cannot learn. It's values and communications that and communication skills. Those are the ones that if they are a good match, and those you can test for in the interview. Really, I've built some processes where I can test for their communication skills and their values during the interview process, and that's the biggest sort of 50-60% is that, and 40% for me is the technical part. The technical part, what I'm actually looking at is basically, okay, if the guy is fresh. Even if agar aapko nahi aata and the university has not taught you properly, are you at least trying to learn? So one of my interview questions is basically, okay, where do you learn from? Tell me some YouTube channels, some websites that you learn from. And when people start talking about, okay, I learned from Mosh, I learned from Code with Harry or something like that, that gives me an insight into saying, okay, the guy is willing to put in the effort. The person is willing to put in the effort to learn. And so that for me is a good fit, right? So that's the thing. So, and forget it, I'm not going to get anyone from the insurance industry. So that's that is just not going to happen because it's a small industry anyways. The domain knowledge we'll have to impart, plus a lot of domain knowledge that we've built on our side, we'll have to impart that. So that is something that we don't expect the person to know, but we are usually looking for an urgency to learn, an urgency to grow, and a willingness to work hard and be honest about the work, because the cultural fit is a big thing for me.
One thing I want to ask you is, like, you know, as someone who's very technical, leading a team that's technical, is there a technical, thing that keeps you up at night where you're like, you know what, I really hope this doesn't break tomorrow because this will, mean a lot of trouble. Is there one thing that keeps you up at night?
Not really. We've got most of our systems pretty secure. Obviously, there are things like, all the data that we're gathering of people now, we have very personal data of people. We have their family, personal information, we have their family information, we have their certain diseases, we have their claim information. So obviously this is something that we are working on securing as we go forward and as we grow bigger, because this information is very, very personal. And we're also carrying a lot of corporate information. So this data, as it grows bigger, currently we're at 350 clients. When we cross 500, when we cross 1,000, this data will become very, very critical to protect. And that's something that that I keep thinking about. Okay, how do we protect it? How do we keep it safe from getting leaked out, because that can spell a lot of trouble for us.
I want to follow up on that fact that, you're going from 350 to 500 to 1,000, right? So you, of course, when you start out, building a startup, you're doing a lot of things differently. But when you're building for scale, things change, right? So what are some of the things that you feel that from the point where you started to now, will start changing, and based on how you scale will help you get more business?
I think when it comes to scale, the biggest thing is training and learning, training and cultivating leaders within your organization, be it technical or be it operations or be it sales or marketing. That's something that both me and Satyan are pretty focused on, is training our next generation of leaders from within our organization who can take over and who can run forward with stuff. Because to a certain point, we've done everything ourselves, where in the tech, I've been coding stuff. Satyan has been doing sales himself. We've trained a lot of people now, and we are imparting over responsibilities and building teams and encouraging them to building teams so that we can scale in whatever different domains that we go to. So that's our biggest goals that we want to pursue is cultivating those set of leaders from within our organization, because insurance in itself requires a lot of domain knowledge, and without that domain knowledge you can't do much. What we've learned also, that in our experience, if we've picked someone from the insurance industry that hasn't really worked and has joined us, that hasn't worked for us, strangely. So if you picked someone from someone who's worked at an insurance company for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years in different capacities and has joined us, has unfortunately hasn't met our cultural fit. So we know that we can't rely on that, and we have to find people, train them, and cultivate them to be the next sort of leaders who will take the organization forward.
One thing that, you know, I keep thinking about again and again is, like, so when you started, of course, it's a heavily regulated industry, like you mentioned. When you started Smart Benefits, from that point up until now, have there been any changes that are very positive that you have seen as a result of, like, general trend as to more digitization and stuff?
COVID has accelerated the ask for the focus towards health. Firstly, COVID accelerated that. Then when the Sehat card came in, that helped us. That was a double-edged sword for us, where when the Sehat card came in, because obviously Sehat card said we want to give insurance to everybody. So a lot of our investors were like, hey, what are you going to do when the government is giving insurance to everybody, right? That turned out to be a positive for us, because it helped us with our biggest... it helped us reduce our biggest dollar spend, which was spreading awareness. So we no longer had to spread awareness. So once people knew about Sehat Card, people already knew, okay, the insurance is something. Then when insurance is something, then and it started getting popular amongst corporates, the young employees started asking for it. And that sort of helped us capture the market and made our conversion to sales easier in both our traditional market segment, which is mostly in the software and the digital world, but also in our non-traditional market segment. So you'll see in our portfolio, you'll see a lot of software houses, a lot of tech businesses, but you'll also see a dairy farm, you'll see a law firm, you'll see a trading firm, you'll see an engineering firm. So sometimes even I'm surprised, okay, why does a dairy farm need health insurance, you know? So it turns out that these the COVID and the Sehat card has helped turn the wheel and helped spread awareness amongst people that, hey, there's something that you need. Plus, people are also realizing that employee salary only goes to a certain amount. They can only increase it to a certain amount, obviously. But other benefits like health insurance help them not only create a better culture, but also a lot of people do it to get loyalty. So a lot of, let's say, Satya companies give health insurance to their employees to get loyalties in turn for loyalties for their employees. Because if you talk about the local context and the local culture, the guy with someone who's in a blue collar job and health insurance pays for the birth of his kid, he's sort of forever indebted to the state that, you know, hey, the state paid for it, so now I owe a big thing, you know, etc. So that's how people also look at it. So that those sort of trends have helped us capture the market and make our sales process easier.
Yeah, that's very interesting to learn, because I think similarly with Rast also, fintechs are also having a great time with, like, advertisement in terms of, like, okay, here's how things work, here's how you can do things. So it's very easy for them to then go into the market and then be able to sell, because, you know, the government is already doing the job of explaining things. So I think that's, you know, that's, it's great when, you know, these kind of initiatives work. And Sehat Card is, of course, you know, very good in terms of what it, you know, gives people. So yeah, so one last question before I let you go. Where do you see yourself or Smart Benefits in the next 10 years?
So we basically want to capture the not only the insurance space. Basically, Smart Benefits is geared towards employee benefits, and health insurance is just the start of this employee benefits. It starts with health insurance, life insurance, and OPD management. And now we are also... we've also gone into retirement benefits like provident funds, like the 401k in the US. There's a provident fund in Pakistan, so we also do that now. We just signed up our first customer on that. So we want to add this suite of benefits to Smart Benefits while also diving deep into the health space. The health space is very, very broken, where we want to first digitize claims, make them paperless, make payouts faster when it comes to that, when it comes to working with the insurance companies, diving deep into health insurance, increasing our suite of products, possible international expansion into the region, into the MENA region. That's something that we're looking at also. So those are sort of things that we are looking at in the next 4 to 5 years at least. 10 years, I don't know, but next 4 to 5 years at least, that's what we want to do.
Well, that's great. Good to know that you are looking into expansion of like product services as well as the region, because I think that's where, you know, that's the like the natural course to take. And, you know, I wish you best of luck. Once again, thank you so much for being on the Misal podcast. It was lovely learning about your journey so far and how the product has evolved. And thanks so much for being on the Misal podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Misal podcast. I hope you enjoy the podcast and will thank me by writing a review or sharing it on social media. Make sure you follow and subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. Thanks again. See you soon.